I am interviewing Dr. Donald Carlin. Don is a colleague, but particularly my relationship with him is that of a dear friend. So I feel that I'm qualified to talk to Don and interview him for the purpose of having a permanent record of his voice, his ideas, his sentiments, maybe a little bit about his philosophy of life. And a good way to start is at the beginning, which is to ask Don when and where he was born and some of the circumstances of his family life. Don?
Milo, I was born in Beaver, Pennsylvania, which is about 30 miles north of Pittsburgh in western Pennsylvania. March the 25th, 1925. I was born at home, delivered at home. I'm the second of two children. I have a brother who's 4 years older. I grew up in a rural part of a small community of about 5,000 people in the industrial valley of the Ohio River. Grew up with the smell of steel mills, and coal burning, and the dirt associated with it. I suppose, a fairly normal childhood, but had acres and acres of woods and trees to play in versus the city child who doesn't have that. But then I didn't have very many playmates either, living in a rural area. My father worked for Johnson Lachlan Steel Corporation. He ended up working for that corporation for some 44 years. My mother is what's today not spoken of highly, but easily was a housewife. Didn't have an occupation like most women have today. I went to grade school and high school in Beaver, Pennsylvania. Our graduating class, I think, had 109 people in it, to give you an idea of the size of the school. I started in Geneva College in engineering in early in 1943. And after one semester in college, was drafted and entered the service as a private in the infantry and ended up as a rifleman in the 42nd Infantry Division. Some 21 months overseas, part of that in combat and part of that in the Army of Occupation. Received the Bronze Star Medal. Was discharged in April of 1946. Immediately started into college again, but this time in pre-medicine.
Don, it seems it's very interesting to me to see, to have heard that you had been in engineering school. I had never heard that about you. I'm interested in knowing what mental processes you went through in switching from engineering to medicine. Could you tell me?
Milo, it was easy. I couldn't stand mathematics.
All right, perfectly good reason.
I think when I got out of high school, in western Pennsylvania, with metallurgy and mining and this sort of thing, a predominant industry, one kind of gravitated toward engineering, not really knowing really what else was out there. Most of my mother's family were lawyers, with a few judges in the family. And that was another alternative for me, but I thought I was supposed to be an engineer until I got into engineering and realized rather rapidly that perhaps this was not the field for me. And during the 3 years in the service, where I think some maturity took place, I'm still maturing, by the way, other things presented themselves, and I think it was at that time he decided that perhaps the biological science was best for me. And I think I even started that wondering whether I would continue all the way through or end up perhaps teaching.
I'm intrigued by the possibility that of the medical specialties, you picked one that is perhaps the most fraught with physics, with the hard sciences. I'm wondering, if that wasn't the throwback to the first impulse to go into engineering?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. I know why I went into radiology. I knew early on when I first saw my first x-rays that I was able, with some kind of spatial relationship situation, able to interpret these things with a fair degree of ease. Easier than my colleagues could in medical school at that time, and I recognized that fact. Besides the fact my wife was an x-ray technologist, and I knew radiologists and the radiology business rather well, having to pick her up after school at work when she was finishing work, and being around x-ray machines, and always liked machinery anyhow. So mechanically, it was probably a great place for me to gravitate to.
Very good.
Milo has asked me a question of where did I meet Betty? And I have to go back in my history because Betty and I were married in our last year of undergraduate school. So this lady was with me and helping me through undergraduate school, graduate medical school, and also through internship and 3 years of residency. So I certainly can't disregard her part in my education because it was quite a large part of it. We met when the Army sent me to Fargo, North Dakota, to the old North Dakota Agricultural College the winter of 1942. And I was, of all things, sent here to study engineering in the Army Specialized Training Program. So my engineering went right from my first semester of school into engineering at NDSU. And I was 18 years old, and I met this lovely 15-year-old person. And we probably had about 3 or 4 dates our whole time before I was shipped out into an active infantry division that eventually ended up in the Battle of the Bulge. But we corresponded all the time through school, and when I came back from overseas, Betty was working in New York Hospital in New York City as a receptionist. So as soon as I had checked in at home, I went back and spent 2 weeks in New York getting reacquainted. And then some year and a half after that, we were married. By this time, I was in undergraduate school. Went, as I said before, to undergraduate school at Geneva College in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. Finished there, and in 1948, entered Syracuse University Medical School at Syracuse, New York. First 2 years, that's what it was called. The second 2 years was called the State University of New York at Syracuse, because the state, of course, of New York bought several medical colleges at that time and turned it into a state institution. And by the way, they did a wonderful job because they had a lot more money for chairs and surgery and medicine and pediatrics than the school had before. And graduated from Syracuse in 1952 in a class of 46. All my classes seemed to be small, but there were only 46 people in my medical school class. It was hard to be first and easy to be last. There weren't too many in between. At that time, I thought, having been to Fargo once, I kind of really liked the people out here, and I thought this would be a good place to do general practice, and that's what I was headed for. So I found out that St. Luke's Hospital in Fargo had an internship of general rotating kind that would do just fine to prepare me for a rural practice and general practice, which is what I was aiming for. I might say at this time my wife really didn't want to come back home again, but I kind of dragged her back here for a year. And during that time, I met Chuck Heilman, who was a radiologist at the Fargo Clinic. During my internship...
What was that name again?
Dr. Chuck Charles Heilman. Yeah. You know him.
Yes.
You maybe met him.
Yes, I've heard of him.
And during my internship, I traded a rotation of ear, nose, and throat and a couple other things for a rotation in x-ray, and I spent 3 months of my internship in the x-ray department doing fluoroscopy, reading films under supervision, and generally getting to know what radiology was all about. And toward the end of my internship, Dr. Hammond said, why are you headed this direction? I said, yes, I am. help. And so he suggested a few places that I might apply, and he said, why don't you apply at the Mayo Clinic? And I said, I thought in my own mind at the time, I wasn't sure I was Mayo Clinic material. And he said, why don't you apply there? He said, I'm going down there in a couple of weeks, and I'll drop by and put in a word for you. And he did, and very shortly I was accepted at Mayo without even an interview. And then I began to realize that perhaps I did belong at the Mayo Clinic, and if they were willing to accept me on his recommendation. And by the way, Chuck was a Mayo graduate himself in radiology, so I ended up heading to Rochester in 1953, and I spent 3 years in fellowship there in diagnostic and therapeutic radiology.
Well, now, Don, we have you, in the course of our interview, we have you through your residency in radiology at Mayo. How many jobs did you have when you became a full-fledged radiologist?
Board-certified radiologist.
Board-certified.
Thank you, Milo.
Radiologist.
I guess that board certification is probably the most important piece of paper that I can think of, besides my birth certificate and an Army discharge. That board certification was very important to me, and I think should be to anybody who undergoes the training, as you did, and becomes a board-certified pathologist. You can undergo the training without certification, but I think it's important to have that. How many jobs did I have? Well,
may I interrupt, which is why you corrected me when I said qualified, because
yes,
a non-board certified man can be qualified and labeled as such.
That's correct.
I just want to make that clear.
Now, okay, Milo, we were talking about where did I go after Rochester. At this time, we now have two small girls. Jane was born in St. Luke's Hospital in Fargo in 1953, and Anne was born in St. Mary's Hospital in Rochester in 1955. It's important to tell you that, because now we're starting out with a wife and two small children and looking for a job. And in those days, jobs were very plentiful. One could take a job in radiology almost any place in the country. You were in such demand. We looked in several places and ended up at a fairly large multi-specialty clinic in Washington, D.C., called the Washington Clinic. And there were several Mayo men there, so I perceived the place to be of high quality before I got there, and I enjoyed the person I was going to be working with. I came to find out that this multi-specialty clinic, though, was kind of an executive type practice. This was the handling of large corporate groups of executives for physical examinations, and had no hospital connection whatsoever, so it was completely an outpatient radiology department. And I felt that after about 6 months in this position, this was not satisfactory, and that I was missing part of what I really wanted to do in radiology, diagnostic radiology. So subsequently, in 3 more months, which is 9 months altogether, we left Washington, D.C., and went into a large, into a moderate-sized radiology group in Nashville, Tennessee, again with another Mayo radiologist. And here had several hospital connections, including the Nashville General, and which is the Indigent Hospital, and the Baptist Hospital, and the Vanderbilt University Hospital, and several offices, so it was quite a large practice. Stayed in Nashville only 4 months. Several reasons for leaving Nashville. One was that Betty and I were not true Southerners. And at that particular time, they were blowing up grade schools and defacing temples and things like this with integration. And we felt very strongly right away that this was not a place we wanted to raise our children in that kind of atmosphere. And besides that fact, this group put me to work in the Nashville General Hospital, and I must say the people were absolutely marvelous, but I worked in an undershirt and a lead apron because there was no air conditioning at that time in Nashville, and the summer is quite hot. And I saw myself with nowhere to go. With this group was going to leave me there, essentially, because they all had their own bailiwicks. And I began to more and more to think about the fact that I guess in order to practice radiology the way I wanted to practice it, I may have to do it myself someplace. However, that was not quite to be yet. I left Nashville and headed back to the Midwest because mainly I think I remembered back in my head that the Midwest was kind of where we belonged. And I'm now making decisions for the entire family. Decisions about people, honesty. The Midwestern people are basically some of the best people I'd ever run into, including where I was born and raised and where I was went to school and so forth. So I came back to central Minnesota into a town called Willmar and joined two other radiologists in a trap line practice of radiology. This is having one base hospital in Willmar and 14 smaller rural hospitals, which we visited maybe once or sometimes twice a week to do radiology for the rural. And this was quite satisfactory in many ways because you were providing a service that was badly needed by those people. However, there were some drawbacks to that. You were driving 30 to 40,000 miles a year in all kinds of weather. Sometimes our hospitals were 70, 80 miles from base, so that when you got up in the morning, you were ended up 80 miles from home. Having to drive back in the evening again. So after several years, this got to be a little too much, and I decided I really didn't want to do this the rest of my life either. And besides that, rural hospitals have had a problem in those days. They were really unwilling to update x-ray equipment. So we were working many times with outdated equipment, doing the best job you could do with them, but still not doing as good a job as one could have done with the proper equipment. I think that's changed now, and I talk to people now in rural practices. They tell me that rural hospitals are spending a lot more money on modern equipment and doing a much better job equipment-wise. But I left went to Willmar in 1957 and left Willmar in 1963 and came to Moorhead as the radiologist at St. Ansgar. And in those days, St. Ansgar was a small hospital, well-run, met my good friend pathologist from across the hall, Milo, who had been here just slightly ahead of me. So we were kind of contemporary, so to speak. The practice of medicine in Moorhead in those days was kind of sleepy. We had maybe six general practitioners, a couple of general surgeons wandering around, an internist or two, which weren't headquartered in Moorhead. As I recall, all that was at Moorhead in specialties was Milo and myself. And the rest were family practitioners, general practitioners, they called them in those days. Jim Duncan and John Holton and Vern Carlson and
Brown.
Glenn Brown
was from out of town.
Rice. And Olga Johnson. And what was the doctor's name?
Simison.
Simison from Barnesville and
the other lady doctor.
Lady from Euland.
Saxman.
Yeah, Gertrude Saxman. And I'll do it now.
Yeah, what I'm going to... having you've been through a pretty wide spectrum of professional settings. If I were a young, brand new, wet behind the ears radiology resident, just finishing my residency, and I came to you and said, Dr. Carlin, can you advise me as to the kind of job I should look for? What sort of radiologic job would you suggest, having had all these varied experiences? What would you tell me?
I guess, first of all, an honest one. One where you're able to practice honestly with your referring physicians. And I think that was evident.
What do you mean by honestly?
I mean that one can call a spade, as one should do in medicine. And have your referring physicians respect you for your honesty. And rather, I was in a situation once in Nashville an example. I was in an office practice with this radiology group that I talked about. and I had to do unprepared colon and stomach exams late in the afternoons sometimes. And the first time I had to do that, I objected and said, I won't do this again, and didn't do it again, because this is really detrimental to the patient. You're not giving them the benefit of a good diagnostic examination. I said, why do you insist upon doing this? And the group told me that if we didn't do it, somebody else would. And that's what I mean by dishonesty. You cannot practice that way. I couldn't practice that way. So I said I absolutely wouldn't do it, and so I never ended up in that office again. I ended up in the Nashville General Hospital.
Which is another way of saying what you did before, that you had to work for yourself.
Yeah. It's just an example of honesty in practice. It was evident right away in Moorhead with the people that were referring me work that I could tell them when I should and how I should do my own examinations. And they accepted that, and that's honest. That's honesty I'm talking about.
Okay.
Without regard to economics, without regard to competition, without regard to anything else. And that was present here. And by the way, I might say that in Fargo, Moorhead, I found medicine to be more honestly practiced than I had seen in other parts of the country. And that kind of kept me here.
Perhaps the implication of dishonesty, which would be the opposite of the word you're using, maybe that needs a little clarification. Someone perhaps listening, a layman listening to this tape, might wonder just what the nature of the dishonesty might be. Would it be in terms of doing poor medicine in order to make more money?
Doing too many examinations to make more money. That's one thing.
Okay,
some groups do that.
And not doing them to maximal capacity for the benefit of the patient.
Working only for the benefit of the patient, never for the benefit of the physician.
Okay, that's what I think that says. And so that the issue of money certainly comes into it, but it's not quite as direct as it sounds a little better to say. You're doing more work and therefore getting more money, and doing somewhat compromised work. I just want to be sure that
don't let the profession down too easily, Milo. We do have dishonest people.
There are, I'm certain.
But by and large, it's a very honest practice. You know.
Yes, there are certain compromises that are made. If I may interject a slightly personal view, I've seen very little rank dishonesty. You know, real crookedness in medicine. I've seen compromising of all sorts, where you rush through cases, you take quick histories and physicals because you have too many people there, and rather than cutting down on the number of people in your office, you just do them because you need to pay your bills, to that extent. But I've seen very little real crookedness, highway robbery type of...
No, especially not here.
Yeah, and none here.
Yeah.
None of that here at
that.
All.
So what would I tell a young radiologist? I guess, experience-wise, I'd say pick out where you want to go. Go there and practice like you'd like to practice.
And as soon as they stop you from doing that, get out and go somewhere else.
Or change it. Yeah.
Okay.
I think one of the mistakes I made in moving around was that had I been a little less naive, I might have stayed in Washington, D.C., because I found there a practice that I didn't like, but there were all sorts of other opportunities there. And if I had anything to tell a younger radiologist, if you like the area, go there, and things will work out. If you practice honestly and diligently, I don't think you can miss.
Well, now, Don, we're going to get into your retired phase of existence and use that as a springboard to get a little bit closer to you as a human being. Would you tell us now what your age is at this particular moment of the interview?
And my age?
Yes. And
60.
60. And when did you retire?
I retired from St. Ansgar Hospital in 1980 at the age of 55.
And did you make a nice adjustment to this retirement?
I thought so.
And has it been pleasant for you?
Yes, it has. Right. I really enjoyed practicing medicine as long as I practiced it. But I think now I enjoy not practicing. if I might say that.
Yes, that
makes
sense. Not
that it's anything against medicine, it's just a personal thing with me that I think I had worked long enough and hard enough, and I think it was time for younger people.
So there are absolutely no regrets.
None whatsoever.
For having retired.
From the day I walked out, I had no regrets.
Beautiful.
I missed a little bit of the camaraderie, and I think anybody would. I mean, we were associated many years together, and I do miss some of that daily or weekly contact with people, but now, as I look back over the last 5 years, things have changed so much in medicine that I don't see all that camaraderie as it was in those days. And all old people say these things. It ain't like it used to be in the old days. But it truly isn't. I could speak for you too. We had
most certainly you're right.
Practicing medicine in that little hospital down there.
Yeah.
We had fun with our physicians, with our staff. It was a good time. I think people did enjoy it.
Yes.
But I don't miss it now.
Don, is there anything you are now doing by virtue of the fact that you retired that you never had a chance to do before? Things that you enjoy, new aspects of your life?
Not a whole lot. It's essentially true that my life hasn't changed a great deal since I quit practicing medicine. Because for 16 years, during the time I was practicing medicine, I had already started art welding. That is working with metal and producing objects of art, and I'm still doing that. Instead of doing it at 2 or 3 in the morning or over lunch hours, I now do it, at a more decent time of the day. But I guess beyond that, and having time now to travel a little bit and visit my new grandson in Rochester, and by the way, the daughter I took to Rochester when she was 1 year old is now a radiologist on the staff at the Mayo Clinic, did her medical school training and radiology training there. So a generation has turned over, so it was time for me to quit, I think.
That was a good signal, wasn't it? Your daughter is becoming a radiologist.
I think so. When you see a whole generation turn in front of you, I think it's time to say, well, now really, do I need to stay in this, or should I be doing something a little different?
Were there any regrets at all with your choice of profession, all of medicine?
None whatsoever.
You would do it all again?
I would do it again, I think. Even the horrific years of sweat and blood it takes to get through medical school or to even get into medical school, I guess I would do it all again. I can't think of any other profession that would enrich me both, psychologically and
monetarily.
I guess I would choose it again.
Don, could you tell us a little bit about yourself as a human being, some of your aspirations that remain that you would like possibly to fulfill? Basically, I'm asking, do you have any other ambitions? You've fulfilled a lot of ambitions in your lifetime. Do you have any others that you would like to fulfill?
Yeah, I'd like to lose 30 pounds. And I've quit smoking. Those are physical ambitions. I know you're looking for something higher than that, and I really have to say, really not true. I enjoy creating what I'm creating in the way of sculpture, but I don't see ambition-wise as I'm ever going to... I'm not aimed to be some great artist that's going to be known in the world at all. As long as I can continue to have fun to do it and enjoy doing it, I'll do it. I would like to explore music a little bit, and I may do that one of these days as well. But beyond that, I just think visiting kids and grandkids and doing a little traveling around, enjoying nature it seems to be enough.
To me, that speaks of a very tranquil personality. You're not a hangdog, disappointed, embittered person. You're a success.
There's a saying that there'll always be. For my children, one that is if you can find in this world what you want to do, you must learn how to do it as well as you can, and do it honestly and diligently, and the world will be yours. And I think that works. It worked for me and worked for my kids. By the way, I told you that Jane was a radiologist at Mayo's. I didn't tell you that Anne, who is at the present time 31 years old, is married and is an advertising account executive in Duluth, Minnesota. And Todd, the youngest, is 27 and is in the middle of his master's program at ND, at North Dakota State, in business.
You can be very proud of these three children. Well, thank you very much, Don, for the interview.
You're welcome, Milo.